How do Christians impact the larger society around them? That's a question many are asking these days. One answer is political involvement. We looked at that a little bit last week. There are other ways, however, perhaps even more effective. Today we look at a text from a different period in Israel's history, that of the monarchy. And it's a text about what the Bible calls wisdom and its impact on the world. Please listen to 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 29 to 34.
God gave Solomon wisdom, very great insight, and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the men of the East, and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than any other man, including Ethan the Ezrahite, wiser than Heman, Chalcol, and Durda, the sons of Maal. And his fame spread to all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. He described plant life from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. He also taught about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. Men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom.
This is the end of a text that begins back in chapter 3. It's a wonderful story. You've probably heard of it. This is when Solomon ascends to the throne after his father David's death. And it says, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, ask for whatever you want me to give you. And Solomon answered, you have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. And you've continued this great kindness to him in having given him a son to sit on his throne this very day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. But I am only a little child. I don't know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people you have chosen, a great people too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours? The Lord was pleased that Solomon asked for this. And God said to him, since you have asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for a discernment in administering justice, I will do what you've asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will have never been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. The text goes on to say that how the Lord was so pleased that Solomon had to ask for what he asked for, that he gave him all the things he didn't ask for, all the wealth and security and long life and so on. And the point is that God gave Solomon his one and greatest desire, and that is the wisdom of an old and experienced man while he was still very, very young. Usually wisdom comes from experience and study and so on, and God gave him that wisdom early on that most people would have to wait a long time to get. And the text goes on to illustrate the impact of that wisdom that Solomon had. And the first thing we see, as you go from chapter 3 into chapter 4, we see Solomon in a courtroom deciding a famous case between two prostitutes. Each claimed a baby as her own. One was lying. She had lost her child and then stolen the other's. Well, Solomon commanded the child to be cut in two and half given to each. And the real mother pled for mercy, preferring that the child live with the woman who stole it than be killed. And Solomon realized, of course, that was the mother and awarded her the child. And the text says, when all Israel heard the verdict the king had given, they held the king in awe because they saw that he had wisdom from God to administer justice. Then the text moves on to outline Solomon's administration of his kingdom. Solomon received a tribute. He had to appoint, in fact, 10 district governors because of the size of his kingdom. And the text is very careful to list them all by name. And it says they were tasked with supplying linguistics. And then it says at the end, the people of Judah and Israel were as numberless as the sand, numerous as the sand on the seashore, and they ate and they drank and they were happy. And then because he had so many effective treaties, his kingdom expanded in size and he received tribute from a number of smaller nations. And it ends that section saying, during Solomon's lifetime, Judah and Israel from Dan to Beersheba, from north to south, lived in safety, each man under his own vine and fig tree. Solomon had maintained an impressive standing army or cavalry, whatever you call chariots anyway. Solomon was the wisest administrator who ever lived. Great prosperity for his people with a strong military he really didn't have to use. And finally, we come to our text, one of my favorite texts in the Old Testament. Verse 29 of chapter 4, God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. And now we move into the more artistic and academic expressions of wisdom. It says in verse 32, he spoke 3,000 proverbs and his songs numbered 1,005. We have some of the proverbs in a book, the Bible of that name. And one of his songs, the Song of Songs, is another work of Solomon in the Bible, as is, I believe, Ecclesiastes. Solomon is, therefore, one of the most prominent and one of the most published poets and songwriters in all of history. And then it says, he described plant life from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. And he also taught about animals and birds and reptiles and fish. Today we call him a naturalist or a scientist. He had extensive knowledge in botany and zoology. Government, administration, leadership, art, science, no matter where we look, we read of his impact on his contemporaries. Now, I'm not talking about Jews now, fellow Jews. I'm talking about Gentiles. I'm talking about pagans, people outside of Israel. Verse 34, men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who heard of his wisdom. Kings from the surrounding region marveled at Solomon's grasp of the practical administration of justice. That's really something else. How does he do that? His ability to bring prosperity and expansion without warfare. I'd like to be able to do that myself. The king sends somebody. His ability to express in words the passions of youth and the insights of age all at the same time. His powers of observation and ability to see how all of life forms a harmonious whole. Have you heard about what he's teaching? Let's send somebody. You know, every age has its greatest scholars, its greatest artists, its greatest leaders who get things done, people on whom kings rely and from whom they learn and nurture their own souls, the Aristotles, the Einsteins, the Mozarts. During the reign of Solomon, all of their paths crossed in Jerusalem. Some of them are listed for us, ones who were internationally known in their own day. He was wiser than any other man, including Ethan the Ezrahite. Wiser than Heman and Calcol and Darda, sons of Mahol, names obviously revered three millennia ago, but now only one from that group is remembered, and that's Solomon. His fame spread to all the surrounding nations, and people came to learn from him. They didn't come because he conquered them. They didn't come because somebody passed a law telling them to do what he said. They came because they admired him. They respected his achievements, and in their own field of endeavor, they wanted to be like him. You know, our idea of wisdom these days is typically shrunken to fit into a very small, immediate context. We think of wisdom when we ask God to help us make a specific personal decision. We don't think of wisdom as something larger, as a way of integrating and understanding all of life. We're usually quite content to live fragmented lives, as long as it kind of holds together, like a house with conflicting decorating styles, or no style at all. As long as the roof doesn't leak, we're happy. For us, wisdom perhaps is more like a band-aid or a crutch or an antibiotic. We seek it only when we're hurt or wounded or in danger of being injured and realize that we're kind of in trouble and our lives are out of alignment with God's will and we need wisdom. Solomon didn't quite see it that way. He saw it much bigger. Once he said, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." In other words, wisdom is not a magic fortune cookie or divine eight ball that just miraculously pulls ideas out of the air from nothing. In fact, wisdom is not miraculous at all, unless you count a mind open to God a miracle. Solomon's wisdom, the wisdom that is a gift of the Holy Spirit in any age, including our own, is not the mystical ability to have the right answer kind of pop into your mind from nowhere. Wisdom is the ability and the discipline to clearly see God when you're looking at anything else. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. To fear God just means to take Him seriously as the most basic, the most important, the most fundamental, the most pervasive, and the most dominant fact in any and all situations. To fear God, you've got to understand the knowledge of the Holy One. You've got to understand what He's revealed about Himself in His Holy Word. And then you bring that knowledge into every other thought, every other observation, taking it captive, as Paul said. And that, says Solomon, is the beginning of wisdom. Solomon also put it another way. He said, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. To some extent, that's saying very much the same thing. But in using another word, it helps us broaden our understanding. Wisdom is not just a religious thing. The ability to bring our knowledge to bear, of God to bear on our religion. It is that, but it's much more than that. In fact, wisdom is usually anything but religious. Because wisdom is the ability to bring our understanding of God, our relationship with God, to bear on non-religious matters. The wisdom to see God dominating our thinking is the beginning of knowledge in any field of endeavor. Government and jurisprudence, administration, leadership, art, science, everything. And godly wisdom has a profound effect upon the unbelieving world when they see it, when they see a really good example of it. I'm not talking now about bringing our religion into our professions. We may see that more later when we look at Daniel. I'm talking about bringing godly wisdom with us into our careers and into our work. See, the more we understand about who people are and what things are, and the more we understand what life is about, the more we understand how people and creatures and things interact and work, the more successful we're going to be at anything. We know the Creator, and He has revealed so much about why He created the universe, how it's meant to work, how things are designed, how things are broken, how things can be fixed, and we can bring that knowledge with us into any endeavor. And if we do, we've got a leg up on anybody else. They don't know why things were made. They don't know how things were designed to work. They don't understand the impact of sin and the power of grace like we do. And they certainly have no hope to sustain them through adversities. The people we work with aren't dummies. The best will be very good and they'll be very smart. But they don't have an advantage that we have. We have God's revelation. And we can see God and we can apply His truth in any situation. And they can't. So, all other things being equal, equal intelligence, equal opportunity, and so on, a man or a woman with godly wisdom will outperform those who do not have it. Solomon did not impress the kings of all the surrounding nations because he was a Jew or because he was a religious leader. Solomon impressed people because he was so good at stuff. You know, Solomon reigned for an entire generation of growing economic prosperity and harmony with all of his international competition. How many presidents have been able to do that for 8 years or four? Solomon understood not only ethics, but human nature so well, he could get justice in law courts. Compassionate justice in law courts. We've got one of the best, most advanced judicial systems in history, and it's plagued with injustices. Injustices that anger and demoralize whole subcultures. Solomon appreciated how people work together. How people are beings in the image of God. How they deserve respect. Did you notice how every single name of every district governor was carefully preserved? And you didn't care about those names. But, you know, that was earlier in the section. We don't care about their names today, but Solomon cared. He cared. He wanted their names listed. No wonder he built a dream team of leaders. To work with Solomon meant you were almost destined to go down in history. Because Solomon understood the creation and the fall, he knew well the nobility and the frailty of the common man. And he could express our common frustrations and our common aspirations in better words than we can. It's like he could get inside of us and say what we were thinking. He could say it in words the man on the street could relate to. And so he wrote one hit song after another, one proverbs after another that people would just have in their minds all day long, kind of in their heads, that did more to uplift and encourage and inspire the population than anything else. Helping each person face who they really were and dream about what they could be. In science, Solomon saw as one who sees the Creator behind the creation. He combined detail with overarching connection. unifying the large, the very large, and the very small in ways that contemporary scientists can only dream about. Now look, you may worship a goat made out of stone. You may worship 100 gods or none at all, but you cannot ignore, you don't want to ignore somebody who was really, really good at what they do. The knowledge of the Holy One applied to every field of endeavor made Solomon a remarkable man. And people valued being around him. They valued learning from him. And as they learned, of course, they would find it eventually impossible to ignore Solomon's God because he was the open secret of Solomon's success. Now, it's my personal opinion that Solomon wrote a tract for those great pagans who came to study with him. It's called the Book of Ecclesiastes, but that's another message sometime. Our nation began with a group of leaders who, to a significant extent, were saturated with biblical thinking. The citizenry of that time, to a large extent, was saturated with biblical thinking. And consequently, these men and women were very good at what they did. And they fashioned perhaps the most remarkable and successful nation that has ever existed. And the skill of those nation builders has spilled over their own time some 200 years. But over that 200 years, biblical wisdom has steadily eroded in America. It's no longer taught. It's no longer taught in our public schools. Now please, I'm not trying to bash public education. The political forces at work in education are monumental, and I recognize many wonderful Christians are involved in trying to make a big difference. But the fact remains, the godly wisdom, the knowledge of the biblical God applied to learning, that is just not taught in our public schools. It is not taught in most non-religious private schools. It's a hit or miss proposition in many religious schools. And it's not taught at all in most public and private universities. Biblical wisdom is barely taught in the American church. In the early 1900s, the church in America split. I'm not talking about a particular denominational split, but it's a split that tore wisdom in half. On the one hand, speaking rather categorically, the Bible was forsaken and a social gospel raised in its place, an attempt to bring a godless wisdom into all areas of human endeavor. And in response arose fundamentalists, people who wanted to remain faithful to the Bible, but who restricted their attention to strictly religious matters. This split, this modernist fundamentalist controversy, effectively cut godly wisdom off at the root in America. More and more, as modernists sought to bring the insights of their religion into all areas of life, but they'd forsaken the fount of that wisdom. And fundamentalists guarded the religious fountain, but brought that life-giving water to virtually nothing else. And throughout the 20th century, biblical wisdom withered in America. And now we realize that we just aren't so good at what we do as we used to be. Our politics are not as noble. Our business more shaky. Our families are in shambles. America remains a world leader largely today through our technological superiority and wealth, accumulated cultural capital that will not last forever. Now we are Christians. We belong to a different kingdom, and our future is quite secure, thank you. But like Solomon, wouldn't it be grand if we could influence the greater world around us for good? Now today there is a hue and cry for a political fix, and I am all for any laws that will help, and I am against any laws that would hurt. But our society has not been crumbling because of bad laws. And new laws, I don't know, is going to change very much. Our society is crumbling because of a lack of wisdom, godly, biblical wisdom. I'm not talking now just about churches and poor preaching. That's a whole other problem. I'm talking about Christians seeing God so clearly in their careers that they simply excel. Excel in ways that make leaders notice and want to learn from us. If we produced filmmakers like Solomon, instead of, as we did in the 20s and 30s, abandon the film industry. If we produce filmmakers like Solomon, whose craft was so effective, whose ability to intrigue the mind and touch the soul was just irresistible, even the fact that he was a Christian would not stop the leaders of the industry from admiring him and studying him. And they couldn't study him for very long without running into the reason for his success. If we produce journalists with courage and eloquence and insight, or songwriters that kept echoing in our head all day truths about ourselves. If we produced architects and builders and craftsmen and decorators who understood how environments bring out the best in people. Or lawyers and counselors and psychiatrists and teachers who understood how people learn and relate and resolve conflicts. If we produced leaders who knew how to bring out the very best in fallen people. If we produced homemakers who knew what a home is and how to make one. If we became people who could see the living God in everything we do, we would be so successful, so good at stuff, people would want to learn from us. And if they did, guess what they would learn? How do we become and produce people full of godly and biblical wisdom? Well, the most important single thing is we have to want it. I mean, we have to really want it. Remember, James said, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God who gives generously to all without finding fault, it'll be given to him. That's almost a commentary of Solomon, isn't it? Solomon asked for wisdom. God gave it to him generously, tremendously generously. Ah, but James goes on to say, you have to ask for it with a single mind. You can't be double-minded. You can't be wanting a bunch of stuff. You got to want that. You got to want that. You got to want that. And God was so pleased, he'll even give us the other stuff that we don't ask for. But he'll answer our prayers if we want it. If we want wisdom, he'll give it to us. He'll give our children wisdom if we ask for it. If we look for it as for silver, as we search for it as for hidden treasure, as Solomon says. But you know as well as I do that most of us search for silver. And we look for hidden treasure and money and prestige like everybody else. Well, Solomon wasn't like everybody else, was he? He didn't ask for other things. He asked for one thing. I want wisdom. God, let me live and work as if you were real in my face all the time. God said, you've got it. You've got more than you've dreamed because you want that. Solomon, you're going to understand stuff like nobody else understands stuff. Boy, are you going to succeed. If we want wisdom, we've got to apply biblical knowledge to our careers. We got to go after it. That means studying God's word privately and with the best teachers we can get, applying it to where we live. Brian, I think you'll agree with me, is musically gifted. Right? He wants to use his gifts for Christ. So what did he do? Brian went to seminary and spent 3 years getting a Master of Divinity degree so he could do music better. That doesn't make sense to a lot of people. It doesn't make sense to a lot of music directors. But he did. And Brian understands the Bible as well as any beginning pastor. He also has pastoral gifts. And it's that biblical wisdom that's going to make him a great worship leader and a great musician. Now, am I suggesting that more people should go to seminary or something to prepare for their career in law or construction or teaching or sales? Yes! That's exactly what I'm saying. Or if not seminary, perhaps some other kind of extension courses or Bible college or just finding some excellent training material and CDs and videos and books to read. Finding good and wise mentors, elders, spiritual people in your own career field. Finding people of like mind, like pastors will in seminary. You can form spiritual bonds within your own profession, within your own job, so you can pursue it well. You want the godly wisdom that's necessary to succeed above average, then you need to know how to use this word in your situation. Because if you do, if you have that, you're going to have knowledge and insights on the job that nobody else has. If we want our children to learn biblical wisdom, then we've got to teach it to them. Let's start at home, sharing with them all the stuff we are learning and we are putting into practice in our job. They may have a different career, but they'll see the model. They'll be able to imitate it. Let's make sure that the education they get includes the application of biblical wisdom. I don't care how you do it. If you want your children to excel, they've got to have influences that will teach them how to apply biblical principles to life. If you only want them to succeed in the way any pagan can, then you don't have to worry about it. But if you look at your child as David looked at Solomon, and you want more for your son and daughter, then you're going to surround your child with the practical application of biblical themes. And David did it to the best he could. And who knows? Maybe God will bless you the way he blessed David and give you a child whose wisdom stands head and shoulders above his parents. Wouldn't that be great? Parents, please, please don't send your children off to some college without knowing how they're going to get some input in applying their knowledge to the knowledge of God, weaving them together in whatever they choose to do with their lives. Does that mean you have to choose a Christian college? No, I went to the University of Maryland. I studied physics. Not only did I come to Christ there, I grew in godly understanding, but I didn't grow in godly understanding because of my college courses. I had a wonderful Christian fellowship, an intelligent Christian fellowship, and a wonderful church home that taught me how to think. Now, some Christian colleges have that built in. That's the advantage they offer. And, of course, there are some young people who are so solid in their biblical worldview, by the time they leave home, they can find that for themselves. But we need to help them. However we do it, we Christians need to learn, and we need to practice applying what we alone know to the real issues of life. I'm talking about knowing the character of the God who is running everything right now. He is always a factor and the biggest factor in everything that happens, and we know who he is. I'm talking about knowing the wonder and the purpose of creation, especially the human race. Knowing the respect and the honor that brings out the best in people. Knowing and guarding the way that sin has crippled and distorted us and made us dangerous, and preparing for that too. I'm talking about knowing the greatest power for good on earth. That's the love of Jesus Christ. And I'm talking about knowing the hope of future glory that can sustain you through any adversity this world has to offer. The scriptures teach that believers can have a tremendous influence on the larger, unbelieving world around us, a very positive one. We've already seen how that could happen in politics, but I'm convinced that there are means of influence that dwarf politics. Today we've considered one of them. The application of biblical wisdom in ways that make us very, very good at what we do. It worked for Solomon, and I believe it will work for anyone who chooses wisdom above every other desire.